Welcome to the Hamilton Spectator Newsroom Insider. I'm David Crosby. On June 20th, 1981, Diane Rowendowitz went out with friends to celebrate her 24th birthday. She did not make it home. Her body was found the next morning, strangled and drowned. She had been sexually assaulted. The case went unsolved for 17 years. In 1997, Hamilton Police began a task force investigating sexual assaults occurring between 1980 and 1997. In connection to an alleged assault on another woman in the same area, 7 weeks prior to Diane's, Robert Badgerow came under police scrutiny. A DNA sample matched semen collected from Diane's body. And so began the first of his four criminal trials for the same first-degree murder, an unprecedented distinction in Canadian legal history. Badgerow was found guilty at his first trial, but after years in prison, this conviction was overturned. A second and third trial followed, both ending in a mistrial. His fourth was held in Kitchener last fall, and resulted in him once again being found guilty of the first-degree murder of Diane Rowendowitz. Now, less than a year later, he is to be released on bail. Again. Susan Claremont joins me to explain. All right, so Susan, thank you for joining me today. We're talking about the most recent Badgerow appeal.
Right.
What happened?
So, convicted killer Robert Badgerow is out on bail, or will be within the next few days. It's what's called bail pending appeal. So he has appealed his most recent murder verdict. And while he's waiting for that to wend its way through the court system, which could take, frankly, a couple of years probably, he is out on bail and free to live out in our community again.
And forgive me, is this not what happened with his first conviction as well? He was out on bail for that, I thought, or appealed that.
This is the fourth time he's been out on bail at various stages of this. You know, this all of this goes back 31 years now. So 36 years. Yeah. So he was on bail. The last time he was on bail was during his murder trial. He was actually, you know, going home every night during that trial and walking around the courthouse freely while he was on trial for first degree murder. So he's been on bail, you know, before, and he's done it without any problems, which is why he was granted bail once again. You know, the court has to look at things like, is he a flight risk? Well, Robert Badgerow's never left Hamilton. He killed Diane Rowendowitz in 1981 and in Stony Creek, and Badgerow has always lived somewhere nearby, usually in Binbrook. That's where his family is. But given lots of opportunity to leave the area, leave the country even, he never did that. He's always stayed close by. So flight risk has been considered deemed a non-issue with him. They also consider whether he is likely to reoffend or be any kind of a danger to the public. And he has never been charged apart from the day he was arrested and charged with Diane's murder, as well as, you know, there's this whole sidebar where he was also charged with the attempted murder of another woman. And that case wound up being dropped against him because by the time it came to court, so many witnesses had died that it was impossible to properly try that case. But apart from those two charges, I say a bit sarcastically, he's never faced any other charges. He's abided perfectly by all of his bail conditions that he's had throughout the years. And on paper, and you know, in his own history, is technically a perfect candidate for bail. Having said that, you know, I've been talking to people all day long who are shocked and appalled and angry that this convicted killer is out living in our midst, or will be very shortly.
And you're much better acquainted with these things than I am. But from an outside perspective, it sort of seems like, what exactly is the point of a justice system based on incarceration if we're not incarcerating those convicted of these crimes?
And, you know, that's where my head has been at today and yesterday when I was working on the story. You know, I sat through his entire trial, his most recent trial, last fall. For 3 months in a Kitchener courtroom. It was long and hard, and at the end of it, a jury found him guilty of first-degree murder. And here we are, not so many months down the road. You know, I watched him being taken off to prison that day. Mm-hmm. And now here we are, months later, and he is about to go back to living the same life that he was living before that trial started. It's almost as though it didn't happen. Yes, he has spent these past months in prison, for sure, but he's about to be released and about to go back to living with his mother and his brother in Binbrook, and he will be able to go out and about in the community. He'll have a curfew and some other conditions, but, you know, I've you could run into him at the park.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He'll be back out in our midst. So it seems unfathomable that someone who is a convicted killer could be back out.
Can I ask then your opinion? I read the appeal decision today, and it really seems to focus on, as you said, Badreau's record, the fact that he isn't a flight risk because he hasn't fled. You know, he's been here
right.
36
can
years.
Can I just say that it's his bail decision that you read today?
Thank you.
He hasn't actually had his appeal yet.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So it does seem really to focus on the quality of his character and sort of this idea of whether or not he's a risk to the public and how much of a risk to the public
right.
he is. Why is this different, in your opinion, for him as opposed to anybody else convicted of this? I mean, is it simply...
Right.
What precedent does this set, I guess, is what I'm asking.
So this is very unusual. It's not unheard of, but it is highly unusual. It's tough enough. You know, his own lawyer said yesterday that it's rare enough for someone accused of murder who hasn't yet been convicted to be out on bail, let alone someone who's actually being convicted of murder. I'm not sure, I'm just trying to sort of scroll through other cases I've done. I've certainly done other cases with accused murderers being out on bail, Mark Staples being one of them. I used to, bump into him in the coffee shop at the courthouse during his murder trial. But, you know, to actually have been convicted and be released from prison pending an appeal. Badreau at one point, you know, maybe I should just back up a tiny bit and remind people that part of the reason Robert Badreau's case is so infamous is that he is the first person in Canada to ever be tried 4 times for the same first degree murder. So he has been through the justice system, longer and in a more complicated fashion than most any offender ever in Canadian history. The first time I ever met Badreau was I went to visit him at jail at the Hamilton Wentworth Detention Center on the day that he learned his appeal had been granted from his first trial. So his first trial, a jury found him guilty of first degree murder. And he appealed, and he was granted an appeal. He was granted a new trial. And on the day that that was decided, I went and visited him at jail. And soon after that, a couple of days after that, he was released on bail. So he was, at that point, on bail pending a new trial. This time it's a little bit different. We don't know yet whether he's going to have another trial, which would make his fifth trial. But in however many months or likely years it will take to even get to that stage, he'll be living in Binbrook.
This is absolutely mind-blowing. There is no precedent for this. I mean, this is, as you say, he's...
There's no precedent for the number of times he's been tried. He is the yeah. precedent. But there have been cases of other convicted killers being released, and most often, I think I'm fairly certain that Guy Paul Morin was granted bail pending an appeal. And of course, Guy Paul Morin was eventually exonerated and found to have been wrongly accused. Badgerow maintains his innocence. Even after four trials, he has always maintained his innocence, which is part of the fascination for me about... I think this case is by far the most interesting case I've ever covered for all kinds of reasons, including four trials, including the fact that it went unsolved for 17 years, including the fact that it was really scientific advances and the discovery of DNA technology that led to Badgerow's arrest. It's also, Badgerow admits and almost always has admitted that his DNA was found inside of Diane Rowenduits. And his explanation for that is that he had anonymous consensual sex with a woman in his car outside a bar in Stony Creek, and they smoked a joint, they had sex, he never knew her name, never knew anything about her, and then she left his vehicle and walked away, and he never saw her again, and that woman was Diane Rowenduits, and that somebody else killed her and raped her on her way home. It's been said, I love this quote, it's one of my favorite quotes ever. Badgerow's one-time brother-in-law, who in fact became a Hamilton Police homicide detective, said, well, that makes you the unluckiest guy in the world, doesn't it? I mean, the statistical chances of that happening, could it happen? Yes. Is it likely to have happened? I don't think so. So there's a million twists and turns, all the legal, ins and outs of this. It just never ceases to amaze me.
Absolutely. Yeah. So have you spoken to Badgerow's mother about this?
I have, yes. I've gotten, one of the odd things about this, I've been covering it for 20 years. So I've gotten to know all the key players quite well, including Rob Badgerow and his family. So I spoke with Mrs. Badgerow yesterday, and she is, as you can imagine, she is happy and excited that her son is being released from prison and is coming home. And she's planning a party, a barbecue, where she'll invite family and friends. And she tells me that there are still many supporters, that the family is still behind him, and we've seen that. They come to all of his court appearances and have been by his side, but also that there are lots of friends who still continue to support Rob, and that they will be there to welcome him home.
And did you speak to the Rowenduits family?
I did. Yeah. I spoke with Carl Bruendewitz. He is the nephew of Diane. He was just a young boy when his favorite aunt was murdered. He's a grown man now with family of his own. And he was angry and upset and feeling very let down by the justice system about this news of Badgerill's release. You know, he says, and I completely understand why he says this, he says it's like the justice system, you know, cares more about the rights of the offender than it does about the rights of the victim and the victim's family. And it's hard to argue with that, you know, when it felt like justice had finally been done for Diane, when that guilty verdict came in last December, and now, you know, 8 months later, Badgerill's going to a barbecue.
Yeah, I guess that really puts the point on it.
Right, yeah. It will be a long haul before we get to the appeal stage. I'm not familiar at this point, you know, what the grounds of appeal are. I believe it has something to do with the only new piece of evidence that was heard at the final trial. An appeal can only be granted for two reasons. One is if there is new evidence being introduced. And as far as I know, there is no new evidence in this very old, well-investigated case. Or if there has been, if the judge has made an error in law somewhere along the way. And so I suspect that that's what the grounds for appeal will be. And it will likely have something to do with that one piece of new evidence that had been heard at the last trial. The fourth jury was the first jury to hear all the evidence that had been gathered in this case, and it had to do with a very critical 911 call that was made a few days after Diane's murder, in which a man anonymously called police and revealed very intimate details about the murder and the murder scene. And this jury, for the very first time, heard that call almost certainly came from a phone booth that was literally steps away from where Robert Badgerill was working a shift at DeFasco. And powerful evidence, important evidence, and this jury heard it for the first time. But that might also be what the grounds for appeal would be.
I remember seeing that at some point in the appellate judge's ruling on this, that it looked as if they were going to be taking issue with
yes.
the judge's instructions to the jury exactly about that.
Right, something to do with that. I don't have the fine details
yeah.
on that. That won't come out until we get to the appeal stage. But, you know, David, this case is never going to end. It never will. It's been 36 years. You know, there is the possibility, as remote as it is, that an appeal could be granted. If an appeal is granted, then I can pretty much guarantee that the Crown's office will appeal that decision, and we'll be back, as this case has been a couple of times already, we'll be back to the Supreme Court of Canada. You know, it could go on to a fifth trial, which I can't even sort of wrap my head around, but possibly a fifth trial. But even if that fifth trial doesn't happen and Badgerill is left to serve out his prison time, then we're into parole hearings and all of the stuff that goes along with that. And I cover parole hearings frequently. So, you know, I say this too about all of the families of homicide victims that I work with and write about. It never, never ends. It really honestly doesn't end until the offender dies.
Well, perhaps you'll be covering the fifth trial if it happens.
I will cover it as long as I am a working journalist, because, you know, I'm fascinated by this case, but I also care about this case, and I You know, I never met Diane Rowenowitz, but I have been writing about her for 2 decades, and I feel as though I know her, and I feel as though I owe her to continue covering this story.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Thanks for talking to me.